It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 443. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. There's a couple I have not had a chance to download and get them ready for the show, so I promise they'll be on the next show. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Follow me on Facebook, send me a friend request, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, all one word. And tonight, I have jam-packed show, stack of email, with some great utilities and recommendations, some follow-up to some issues from the last couple shows, projects that I talked about, some utilities. We're going to continue the Java discussion. I have a couple emails from Kate that I want to share with you. I also have a backup story that began in the post show of Tech Vets last night that I want to follow up with. And it has a very happy ending and was very, very good and had some really good tech support take care of the problem. And they're going to love hearing that because they listen to the show. Want to thank Dyn.com for being a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show podcast. What does Dyn do? Well, Dyn, quite simply, helps websites with best-in-class uptime and keeps web traffic to those sites flowing and fast. You want to go to Dyn.com and check it out. You can also get to it through the sponsor link that's on the left-hand side of my website and also in the show notes. And one of the big things that Dyn offers is enterprise-level DNS. And it's offered by advanced features like global traffic management and load balancing and active failover. Dyn has service tiers for companies of any size to get started. Dyn serves more than 4 million customers around the world. DYN, get faster internet by using Dyn. Visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30 at checkout. Again, that's dyn.com/podcast30. So I want to kick things off by talking about one of my biggest clients having a backup problem to an online service that they use called Envelock. And I've mentioned them a few times and I've put them in the show notes because they have great tech support, and any questions I've had, if I had to do a recovery or anything that's happened, they've been right there and they helped me out. And this week, I got a little frustrated because I had a couple nights in a row where the backup failed. I'm partly to blame for this, kind of accidentally. So I want to bring something up that some of you may not realize if you're in this situation with certain backup software. Now, with this server, it's Small Business Server 2008. We do two backups every night. We do a local backup using Shadow Protect for Small Business Server. And then we also every night do an online backup to the Envelock service using their software. Monday night's backup, I noticed I did not get an email saying it completed. And I usually get one around 9:30, 10 o'clock. I did not get that email. I logged in and it was at a screen, a display screen that just kind of was saying it was doing encrypting and doing work. Wasn't sure. You know, logged in a couple hours later, I actually went to sleep, woke up, and it was actually in the middle of the night, and it was still going. So I killed the backup and figured, okay, I'll call Envelope in the morning, see what's going on. So I call them on Tuesday, and they tell me to edit a config file that they've seen this problem before. I was like, oh, great. So I remote in, I edit the config file, fails again. Same thing, Tuesday night. Wednesday night, same thing's happening, and I call up Envelock last night late, and the tech remoted in, and he said, Mike, this backup is working. You got to just let it finish. Somebody must have added a lot of files or made a change. And I'm like, I'm the IT support here. There's no way that there was a big change like that that I wouldn't have noticed. I looked at the size of the main data drive. I said there was no real change here. So why does the backup software think that there's a lot more files that have to be transmitted? We let it go, and this morning I wake up, I log in, and it looks like it's still running. So we're talking 12 hours almost now has passed since this backup started. I call, Josh answers the phone again. We log in and start a remote session where Josh joins me online, and I realize something. On Monday night, I had to make a permission change on a very big section of data. But just adding a permission, remember, I left all the admin permissions the same. I had to make a change because of the change in personnel. And I'm making this slight change and applied the permission through the directory. And it is a big chunk of the data. And he said, Mike, that's it. Their backup was set, and you have different choices based on an archive bit. And when I made the permission change, it changed the archive bit all the way down on the data. So now it thought there was an additional 300 gig that needed to be uploaded. And of course, the thing was blowing up as it was trying to process it. And that's why it was taking so long. The software was really working. I said, wait a second, I got to be able to change permissions at any time. So he said, let's set it by date and time. So now it's only backing up files from the last successful backup, the date and time stamp. And we undid the backup process that it had begun. He made that change. We kicked off the backup because I wanted one, even though it was during the day. And a couple hours later, I get a successful email. Before I got the successful email, I got an email from the tech. I see it's transmitting, so it absolutely worked. I am very happy for the tech support. Remember, when you pick a company for doing anything, it's great when things are going well. That's easy. How are they when things aren't going well, and how helpful are they? They were very helpful, very attentive, and we fixed the problem. I wish that I had made that connection and did a full disclosure on Tuesday morning, or I probably wouldn't have lost Tuesday night for the backup. But all is well. Everything's backing up. And I wanted to share that and kind of close the loop on that story. And I will have a link to Envelope in the show notes, because if you need a professional online backup server that is FINRA compliant, HIPAA compliant, the whole alphabet super compliance, then you want to strongly give them consideration for your online backup service. It's been nonstop, as you know. I have so many stories that I guess I'll throw one more in there. I can pick from so many, and I want to get to the stack of email. Well, how about this one? And there's no solution yet, so I'll just throw this out there. The company that I was going through the migration this past weekend, which just sucked the time out of me, it's two weekends in a row with migrations. And it's interesting. The unplanned emergency migration went better than the planned migration. How can that be? Well, it's a printing company. They have huge, huge printers. And we're going to pick on the Konica Minolta, the 6500 Biz Hub series. And if you were to ever look that up, we're talking some significant printers and significant price. Well, I downloaded the Windows 7 drivers because we upgraded some workstations to Windows 7. I also inserted a peer server instead of an ailing old small server that was a Windows 2003 that was limping along, very old. So we're retiring that. And now I got to come up with drivers. Now, the drivers were right there online. I spent hours and hours trying to get this driver to work. The print job, it looks like it would print. It would go into the queue, be released. It looked like it printed, and it would come back to the queue, and it would never print to the printer. I tried everything under the sun. So today, my goal was I'm going to go in there, and I know they have support on these printers. I'm going to call. I got the ID number for the printer, and I got the phone number. I'm getting ready to call them, and a tech arrived. There was another little issue that they called, and their regular tech who services these big printers was there. And I was like, this is great. I described the problem. 4 hours later this afternoon, as he was continuing to try to fix this problem, now I feel vindicated because here I am with the tech on site, and he cannot fix the problem. I shouldn't have been happy, but certainly part of me was, because I was like, well, I did everything humanly possible, and I couldn't get it to work, and I'm glad the owner got to see this. Look, here's a tech from the company, and he can't get it to work with the driver. So that's still open. They got these two big DocuTech printers. We're talking printers the size of a house, okay? And there's two of them in this huge room. You know, remember, this is a printing company. So now I call Xerox, and there's an issue trying to get the print manager software for Windows 7. What's up with the printer companies that are still only supporting XP? You got to be kidding me. They better be getting ready for when XP's gone. If they're not even supporting Windows 7 properly, you got Windows 8 already out there. How can a company the size of Xerox not have drivers properly and software properly for you know, someone just put in the chat, Kate, they're not going to spend $90,000 on another printer. It's just not going to happen. We're talking printers that are in the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's just not going to happen. Why would they not have Windows? We're talking a new, how would you like a new printer not having Windows 7? These 6500 BizHubs are not old. I don't understand this. Companies better wake up and start supporting their big clients that are migrating to Windows 7. That's why I want it to be clear. This isn't like a little desktop printer. That's why I wanted to paint the picture of the printer that I got to walk and walk to finally get to the end of it. I mean, we're talking huge monster printers that are doing huge, huge print jobs. You should see, we won't even talk about the plotters. Anyway, the challenge was getting all this stuff to work. I also had to get Adobe working, and I learned a great deal of Adobe CS6, the Creative Suite, and licensing. And I learned that lesson on Wednesday morning. This is coming to, you know, a close, the final migration here of everything, but just trying to update a few workstations from Windows XP to Windows 7 became very challenging from the software that they use and the drivers. Very, very hard. I had to keep a couple of the XP systems running or they would have been out of business. So I had to make sure that they could still handle all the production jobs and all the work that's coming in. So you got to remember that when you're doing working with a client, you got to make sure that you will migrate everything. And if it can't migrate, you got to have a backup plan so you don't put them out of business. And that was my concern with the Adobe Creative Suite. This is a mission-critical application, and I didn't want to deactivate the license, not knowing that I could get it activated on another one. That's why I learned about the Adobe Creative Cloud. If you're an Adobe user, it looks expensive but on the surface, but when you think about it and the cost of the software, you're probably in a better position, and certainly from a licensing issue, look into this, and that's called Adobe Creative Cloud, in buying not only the support, but also your licensing for the software, and it's easy to get it from one system to another. And that's what I was going through on Wednesday. I did not understand the Adobe licensing, or at least the new way that they're licensing, and I was thrown into the fire on that. Let's get to some email. All right, the first email, and I've had this for a couple weeks, and I want to get to it. It's from Al, and he says, "Hey, Mike, Happy New Year. Thanks for taking the time to read my Synology email on the last show. I thought it would be worthwhile to do a follow-up email with some lessons learned and some thoughts." Well, we like lessons learned. Data copy. I ended up using TerraCopy to move all the data from the shared D drive on the old XP file share PC and broke it up into smaller sections by doing the root folders in the D drive and then checking the log transfer details. There were several files that exceeded the 255 character limit in XP that caused some transfer issues and files to be skipped. I ended up using WinMerge to compare the source and destination when I was done and gave a report to the customer. These were mostly unzipped versions of files that had been zipped up a few folders higher, and there was nothing major to worry about. I also found a real useful program for finding the path length called TLPD, and it is totally portable and can be found at the following URL, which I'll put in the show notes. User accounts. Just as well, I checked the user logins the night before it went live, as I could not log in properly, and this was due to me setting up the accounts using copy and paste. There turned out to be a space at the end of the username and password from the Excel spreadsheet, and the Synology took the space as valid, and I had to redo the user accounts. That's why testing access to everything and everything that the user is going to be doing, that's why you got to do that test to make sure it works. So that was a good pickup. Permissions. And this is something I ran into just this past weekend that I had to fix, which was permissions issue. I ran into some file permissions issues when the users actually started using the storage to create and edit files. I can only assume that this is because TerraCopy tries to maintain the original permissions, which seemed a little over the place anyway. Yes, to resolve this, I went to the root folders and the web admin interface and recursively set the permissions and ownership and had the users test, and it seemed to work much better. My problem when I migrated all the files this past weekend to a Windows 7 system and I now had XP systems accessing it, I had to do the same thing, go back to the root of the directory, and I had to change the ownership and go down to all of the subfolders and make sure that the ownership was down, went down and was inherited properly to all of the containing subdirectories. Then I was able to change the permission, and it took, because I couldn't understand. I kept changing the permission at the root level of the folder, but when I drilled down, the permissions weren't going down. They weren't inheriting the permissions from the parent directory above. This gets very complicated when you are backing up and copying files from a system that has different permissions and it tries to maintain the permissions. So I feel your pain, Al. I lived that. Backup. I'm not sure what you do for backup, Mike. But when I initially talked about this with the customer and was setting up either a Linux PC at the owner's house running rsync and pushing backups nightly after doing the initial backup on site, but the customer wasn't keen on the Linux option. Actually, had a great Linux email that Carrie and I read last night on Tech Vets that was going over this very topic, which was backups. And you might want to consider a backup PC, which runs under Linux. I did some testing with Delta Copy, which seems to be a Windows rsync wrapper. And I got it all set up and did some testing back to the XP file share PC. I initially thought this required a CYG win, but it does not, and it is fairly straightforward to install and configure. The customer decided that he was going to buy a second Synology unit, awesome, for his house, and have the main unit back up or sync the files back to his second unit at home. We can either do a VPN for this or secure public by opening up the right ports on the DreTech router. The Synology DS112J is a single drive unit, unlike the main site, which is the DS412 Plus, which is a four bay drive model. I need to look into the options for this because I gave the customer the green light to order the second unit and hard drive. Any insight on what you do to back up a Synology to another Synology or solution would be very helpful. I'll have to put that together to you and look at my notes. I've done that about a year ago with a client, and I'll try to get them to you, Al. Overall, this has been an interesting project and a little frustrating as I did the whole project hands-off remotely. That's amazing. The customer is just outside London, and I'm over in Northern Ireland, so you gotta love remote software. I know this has been a fairly long email, so we'll wrap it up. I would still like to look into the additional packages that can be installed on Synology as well and may give some further feedback on that if you don't mind. Absolutely. Thanks again for the wonderful show and all the great tips and tricks you give out every week. Kind regards, Al in Northern Ireland. Al, thank you so much. And I know Al's a regular listener and has sent emails in the past and contributor. I would absolutely love to hear your experiences with some of the other applications that Synology is capable of. Please share them and maybe even record something as an MP3 and send it to me, and I'll put it on the show. This is from Mike, who's Taz Cools, who's a moderator in the chat. And he says, saw this article and was wondering your opinion on it as you are using Windows 8. And this could be for either show. Thanks. And this is an interesting article, and I just started reading it. And it starts out why Windows 8 doesn't fully power down by default. And that's kind of disturbing. Is the fast Windows startup, which was what I thought was cold, is it really a hybrid that it's not really starting up as cold as I thought it was, that it's sort of this hybrid sleep mode that it's in, and that's why it starts up so fast. And this is all hidden behind the scenes. And you know what? I got to really dig into that and look, because that's disturbing if that's the case, because I don't like hibernation. I don't like having my system sleep. When I turn it off, I want to know that I turned it off completely. Thank you for that article. I'm going to take a look at that. Now, two recommendations for the same utility. And it's, let's see, www.forensit.com. And this is transferring user profiles. And both Yitzi and Evan sent this to me. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to put that in the show notes. This is from Cliff. I've been listening to your show for years. I believe it is the best of its kind. Being retired for many years, I have not felt the need to take up your time with questions, but now I need some information. I have been using Glary Utilities. Hey, that's a great set of utilities. I'm wondering if you would recommend a replacement. I am also using a Sea Cleaner, but don't have any issues here. You know what? Either one is fine. I like both utilities, and I got to admit, I haven't been using Glary for a while. I did, and then moved to Sea Cleaner. Sea Cleaner is a great utility. Just continue to use Sea Cleaner for cleaning your registry, doing removing programs quickly. Actually, a better remover is Revo Uninstaller. Stick with Sea Cleaner. Nothing wrong with that. This is from Chad. Great question here. Mike, love the show. I have questions about an application that can change your IP address settings. I am always having to change my IP address to get on the right subnet for all my different customers. I don't know if you've ever used such a program, but I would love any suggestions. FYI, I really need the program to allow static IP addresses to be stacked. I believe the answer is a program called Net Profiles. I sent him the link. I would like feedback on any other utility that you recommend, because I am in the same situation that I visit multiple clients. Some clients I need certain static IP addresses, other ones I need to be DHCP, and it would be great to have like a pre-boot menu that you could select the location that you're at, and then it would force the changes. Maybe just what it does just makes those bulk registry changes quickly, and then you boot your system. Take a look at Net Profiles, and then I want to hear anybody else, any recommendations. This is a comment from John from the UK, and it's help for users moving to Office 2010 Ribbon Bar. Mike, not sure if it's too late, but listen to show 441 and thought this might be of interest for you. For clients struggling to get used to Office 2007 or 2010 Ribbon Bar, there are a number of products that recreate the menu structure of Office 2003. You know, I actually have talked about that one called Ribbon Customizer. Not really a long-term solution, but certainly speeds up the transition and may reduce the frustration when deploying in a hurry, which I gather was forced upon you. Here is the link anyway. Free for personal use and very affordable for commercial use, including an MSI file that can be deployed via Active Directory using group policy. Great show, by the way. Keep up the work. And this is www.ubit.ch/ubitmenu-languages. Link will be in the show notes. I'm also going to add the Ribbon Customizer, and I'm writing that right now so I know to put it on the show notes. The Ribbon Customizer is one that I used to use, and you're right. I actually should have included that for my clients instead of throwing them into the deep end of the pool and said, swim. This is a PDF that was sent to me from a listener, Peter. Wayne, do you hear this? Hi, Mike. Here is a PDF that I put together listing Outlook 2003, 2007, and 2010 data file locations. Anybody that is managing Outlook and all the different versions and wanting to know exactly where everything's located for all the versions, we have one perfect PDF for you to download. And I will have that in the show notes. Peter, thank you. Awesome attachment that you sent me. And I know that my listeners are going to like that file. Thank you very much. I know someone that's going to like this, and this is the next email, and that's Kate. Kate and I both share some of the same pain in supporting Outlook. All right. This is in a follow-up to everything that's been happening with Java, and I got to admit, I'm coming to the party late because I have been so entrenched with some new clients and these projects that I have not given the full attention that's needed for this Java exploit. But I got to admit, none of my clients are running into any of these issues, and I'm not being asked about it. And I'm so happy that I'm not. So I want to read Kate's follow-up to her emails last week that I shared and the great links that she provided, and we got more links here. Thanks for reading my question on show 442 about what people are recommending and customers do and what customers do about this Java exploit. And thank you for your opinion. And thank you for not being hysterical, like at least 85% of the people I've heard on this. Just to follow up a little, after I wrote you, I wrote a column that reflects the release of an update and simplifies the instructions for those who actually do want to disable Java, either on a browser by browser basis or entirely. Here is a link to that article, and I'm going to put that in the show notes. And just so you know, Kate puts together some beautiful articles to help users on breaking down some complex things to succinctly and simply describe how to handle these problems or issues. A great column and article that you want to subscribe to her newsletter. What I take away from your comments is kind of what I thought in the first place. Before everyone got revved up, we need to figure out how best to make things easy and safe for our customers. And yes, of course, I realize that's a trade-off. I've set up, updated, and cleaned up quite a few computers since that Homeland Security advisory. And in all but one case, I've installed Java and then disabled it, leaving a link to the column in the bookmarks favorites for those customers and telling them what I was doing and why. For one guy who travels and uses webmail from an ISP here, I left Java enabled because I know this ISP's webmail requires it. And this guy has no patience, so he will drop his computer from a great height in frustration before he ever looks for a bookmark. Finally, I know you are swamped and probably don't have much time to read, but please at least skim this article by Ed Bott about Java and the Ask Toolbar. Oh my. Here's a quote. IAC, which partners with Oracle to deliver the Ask Toolbar, uses deceptive techniques to install its software. These techniques include social engineering that appears to be aimed at both novices and experienced computer users, behavior that may well be illegal in some jurisdictions. The Ask.com search pages delivers inferior search results and uses misleading and possibly illegal techniques to deceive visitors into clicking paid ads instead of organic search results. Oh, did I get your attention? Absolutely. It's a great read. He goes on to explain that search results from the Ask search engine are redirected to a My Web search results page. Damn. So that's how My Web search is getting onto my customers' machines. So they haven't been visiting. Never mind. For us and those alike, installing Java using 9night.com bypasses the Ask McAfee problem. As Bot points out, regular people aren't aware of or capable of doing that. So, if like me, you have customers who have to have Java, go for the 9night.com version until Oracle makes them stop it, just like Paraform did. I'm curious as to whether you've gotten any other feedback on the Java exploit and what people are thinking. Kate, I have gotten no feedback at all. Nobody has written to me about the Java exploit. Not one customer has mentioned it. I was in a room of the Philadelphia Area Computer Society. There were 35 people at my talk on Saturday. And I asked, does anybody care or know about the Java exploit? And they looked at me like they were all deer in the headlights. Nobody had heard a thing. And remember, my talk was on security. I know you're experiencing it and seeing it. I'm not seeing it. I'm just not. Though today, when I had to log in and to manage my printers that I was trying to get to, Java was very important to that aspect in running, which brings us to the next follow-up email that Kate sent me. Firefox 18, which, by the way, that's another pet peeve. Does Firefox really have to keep changing the number of the version? Is it really a true version change? Do they have to go to 18? Weren't they at 3 like a year ago? Firefox 18.0.1 is completely blocking the Java plugin now. I haven't found any way to enable it and see the attachment. She sent me a nice attachment. Clicking on the more information hyperlink takes you to, and there's a link which explains that it's blocked for safety reasons. So how do we enable it? How dare they just disable the plugin and not give you a workaround or an option to be able to have this? All because Homeland Security stirred the pot and wants to scare everybody? It's an overreaction, I believe, to all of this. If you buy anything from Amazon, please take a moment and use my link, amazon.mikenation.net, miketechshow.com/Amazon. Your price will be the same, but it really helps support the Mike Tech Show. And I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon links. I think it's great. And thank you so much for your help and your support. I was listening to the music at the end credits of a movie recently on cable. And as I was listening to this song, I said, wow, I got to play this on the show. I really like it. And it's 1,000 Years. Give a listen.
And promises how to
That was Christina Perri and the song A Thousand Years, and I'll have a link to where you can buy that song from Amazon.com. I want to thank everybody for joining me live as I record this, and thank you for supporting the show and downloading and staying subscribed. I really appreciate it. That's it. I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.